Hey everyone, welcome to this edition of Keep Watch Pass on the It's Not That Bad podcast channel, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. We are continuing our Razzies month right here on Keep Watch Pass with a very, very interesting one. In the first week of our Keep Watch Pass Razzie specials, we talked about the worst movie nominees of the 90s. We're moving up a decade to the 2000s, so movies that were released in from 2000 to 2009. But we're talking about the worst screenplay nominees. Now, keep in mind, just because a movie is nominated for worst movie doesn't mean that the screenplay was nominated for worst movie or worst screenplay, and vice versa. We're just talking about the worst screenplay nominees. And here to join me on this episode is the love story of my life, Carrie. Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm good. Honestly, people are going to start to think that I'm paying you for these shout-outs.
Wait, you're not?
Shh.
All right, well, here's Carrie. Welcome.
That's better.
Just you wait. There's going to be one day it's like, hey, here's her. Talk. Okay, so when we, or at least when I came up with the ideas for these episodes, and I said worst screenplay nominees of the 2000s, and you saw the list, did at any point did you question if I meant all the nice things I say about you at the beginning of these episodes and wonder what you did to me to make you do these?
I'm not gonna lie, I'm looking at this list and I'm like, really? They're hating on so many different franchises and so many different...
Well, the 2000s was really where IP cinema really took over. Like, the intellectual properties were all over the place. And when you think about it, right? Transformers, Star Wars, like, so many different properties were in there. And it was the cusp of getting the same characters on your screens. You know, because keep in mind, too, Iron Man came out in 2008. So this is also the cusp of the MCU as well.
I mean, this was a time of like Pinocchio and Cat in the Hat and The Grinch.
Now,
like,
keep in mind that Pinocchio is the live action Roberto Benigni movie. Well, so, yeah. You know. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the worst screenplay nominees of the 2000s at the Razzie Awards and pick three of them. A keep, a watch, and a pass. The keep is when we sit there and go, no, that is a good script. We're good with this. The watch is like, yeah, okay, I'd read it. I'd watch it. I see why, but it's still decent enough. And the pass is when we would just turn the page and go, no. Or we might just actually burn the pages. That's how we feel about that. And keep in mind, too, because we're only talking about the worst screenplay nominees of the 2000s, we had a very limited selection of films to go with because there's only five nominees every year. So that's a pool of 50 films from those 10 years. And we're going to start with you, Carrie. What is your keep worst screenplay nominee from the 2000s?
Well, if you know, you know. I am keeping Little Nicky 1,000%. I am actually offended that it made the list.
Me and the butterflies would disagree with you, but I digress. We have covered Little Nicky on It's Not That Bad because, of course, we were going to cover Little Nicky because Carrie loves the film, and I get it, right? I get that there are funny moments in the screenplay. I do. I understand it. I would like to understand the words coming out of Adam Sandler's mouth in that film, but that doesn't take away from the screenplay itself.
You know what? It is so well written. It brings together so many different elements and like, come on, how many special appearances? I mean, Ozzy, come on.
I mean, Rhys Ifans.
Yeah.
It was an absolute gem in that film. Absolutely.
Harvey Keitel.
And they were saving graces of that film. And again, maybe it's because I could not stand Shovel Faces. It's all about the butterflies.
Oh yeah. It was such a great movie. It will always be one of my top favorite movies.
As long as I'm not around to have to watch it with you, we're good. just watch it when I'm out. You know, if I'm at work, go watch it.
Oh, I do. Why do do you think I send you out to the store so often? Like, go for 2 hours.
I have a list of 15 stores I need you to go to for no apparent reason whatsoever. Yeah. Should take you about an hour and a half. Go. Just go.
Yeah.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
All right, my keep film is G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Now, if you told me that in the same calendar year that a G.I. Joe film would hit the screens and a Transformers film would hit the screens and that I would like the G.I. Joe film over the Transformers film, I would laugh in your face until I watched the films and I realized that the G.I. Joe is the superior of the two films. And then if you told me that if a Terminator film would also come out in that same year, and I'd like that more than the other two, then I'd really have a good chuckle. But here we are, and that's the way it worked out. But G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, say what you will about it. You had almost action figure accurate Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, which are the two coolest characters from G.I. Joe. So winner there. Sienna Miller was actually awesome as the Baroness. Rachel Nichols as Scarlet was a ton of fun. It is, however, a very unfortunate waste of a perfectly good Doctor Who in Christopher Eccleston as McCullen / Destro. I can overlook it. I can overlook it. But, I mean, it's exactly what you want out of a G.I. Joe film. With cool weapons, cool vehicles, and freaking Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. Like, what more do you want? It's not like they're trying to write freaking, you know, I Spartacus. It's G.I. Joe. You know, yes. Storm Shadow doesn't look like Storm Shadow at this point, right? We do have Dr. Mindbender. That's cool. We eventually get a Destro. That's cool. But, it's fun. Enjoy it because it's actually almost comic book accurate. My watch film, I'm going to defend this, Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. Now, this is in the worst screenplay nominees of the 2000s. So I'm going to put an asterisk on this in that, please, for the love of God, take out all the love dialogue between Anakin and Padme. Because there's sand and it gets everywhere.
Isn't it necessary, though? You have to establish.
You have to establish the relationship and the budding romance. Can you do it with different words? George Lucas can't write love dialogue. Simple as that. And that's all there is to it. But think about it.
I love you. I know.
That is the most romantic thing he has written. And that works.
It does.
That works.
I love it.
The sand and it gets everywhere. No, 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 no. But the Jedi battle on Geonosis, the introduction of Jango Fett, even though it's albeit brief, and the expansion of the Boba Fett mythology through that. This is prime Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, too. Like, and you get to see Coruscant. And the storyline is actually decent. So I have a feeling that this film was nominated. It's entirely based on the dialogue between Anakin and Padme. I get it. I understand it. Just overlook it. It's a good film. But what's your watch film?
I have to watch How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Like, Jim Carrey version. You know what? And I know that he has straight up refused to ever do a sequel. I think really hated the character. I mean, you know what? I really, really enjoyed it. And I think that Jim Carrey, of all of the actors, was perfect to pull it off.
Oh, I mean, the man is a walking cartoon to begin with. I get it, right? And, you know, the movie did win some awards. It won for Best Makeup at the Academy Awards. At the Kids' Choice Awards, one for Favorite Movie. Jim Carrey won for Favorite Movie Actor. At the MTV Movie Awards, Jim Carrey won for Best Villain. And at the Saturn Awards, it won for Best Music from James Horner and won for Best Makeup. Again, I don't get the hate on for this film. And the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, they're not around anymore, but they should put their their head in the sand like an ostrich for nominating Taylor Momsen as Cindy Lou Who for Worst Supporting Actress.
Oh, she was so fantastic.
She was absolutely fantastic in this. Like, and killing it now with the Pretty Reckless and her band there. But the thing is, like, you have a film that's nominated for all these awards and yet also nominated for the Razzies. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Because it takes the original story, the original Dr. Seuss story, and adds that Jim Carrey flair to it that only he can do, and it's a movie masterpiece. It is exactly what you want to go to the theaters to go see. So what they're complaining about, I have no idea whatsoever. But now we get to the worst of the worst here. So your pass film from the movies that were nominated for Worst Screenplay in the 2000s, what have you got?
Well, I'm sticking with Jim Carrey, and I don't know why he doesn't throw more hate this way towards the Dumb and Dumberer when Harry Met Lloyd. Actually, he wasn't in this one.
He was not in this one at all.
Still, really? Did we really need this movie to happen?
No.
Did this have to take place? Like,
yes, unfortunately, because Hollywood doesn't know any better. Like, the first Dumb and Dumber film. Actually, no, I can't even say it because I don't like it.
Was that necessary even?
No. I don't like it. It's annoying.
It's a property that doesn't have to exist.
No, it doesn't. And yet they went back to it and then they went back to it again. Like, why? Like, we, the movie-going audience, are not that dumb. We don't need to be catered to with Dumb and Dumber almost lets you know that some of the YouTube channels out there are going to exist. And it's noisiness and annoyingness. And I say that knowing that our kids watch some of those videos on YouTube. And
They used to. They're pretty good now.
I think we're away from that now. So thank God for that. Okay, my pass film is one that I have passed on before when we talked about movies starring recording artists. And I'm passing on Swept Away, again because it is that freaking bad. Like, I don't even know why. Like, it's a vanity film. It's like, let's take a classic story, which wasn't that good to begin with anyways, and we're going to take the power couple of Guy Ritchie and Madonna, and we're going to, you know, put them working on this, and we're going to make it as unlikable as freaking possible.
Because we have a bunch of money and we're going to just burn it.
Like, I understand the, not obsession, but the intrigue in a Hollywood couple working on a film together, right? Does it ever really pan out? Usually not. Gigli, for example, right?
Also a contender.
Daredevil. Because, of course, Ben Affleck was with Jennifer Garner at the time. Deep Water, which, of course, Ben Affleck was with Ana de Armas. Basically, it's all Ben Affleck. But, I mean, like...
I was going to say, Adam Sandler has his wife play a role in most of his movies.
But the thing is, you know, and in fairness to Adam Sandler, his wife is not a Hollywood star.
The Kevin Smith rule.
Okay, but again, Jennifer Schwalbeck is not a Hollywood megastar, right? That is directors and producers working with their family, and that I always appreciate. It's kind of like whenever Rita Wilson shows up in a Tom Hanks film, right? That's fun and works well. Even though Rita Wilson is a good actress on her own and did make a name for herself, but it's, let's be honest, Bennifer was everywhere.
Is Blake Lively in Ryan Reynolds? Like, I'm talking like Deadpool.
Not in Deadpool.
Free guy.
But they were together in Green Lantern. Now, I think that's where they actually started dating.
That's where they met, though.
That's where they met, exactly.
I mean, after they got married.
No, after they got married, no. I don't think they've actually been in a movie together. But, I mean, like, this, Madonna is one of the biggest stars at the time. Guy Ritchie is one of the hottest directors at the time. So it's not like they were starring in it, but it was Guy Ritchie directing Madonna, and clearly he didn't direct very well, or working with a horrible script. Like, and that's the thing. The story is hard. There isn't a likable character in this story at all. Like, go watch for an hour and a half of people you don't like. Not necessarily great filmmaking, but that's just me. Okay, before we go, Carrie, please remind our listeners what your keep, watch, and pass films are from movies that were nominated for the Worst Screenplay Award from the 2000s.
Okay, my rundown for 2000 is I am keeping Little Nicky always and forever. I am watching The Grinch Stole Christmas at least once a year. You know.
Yeah.
Somewhere between November and December. And I am definitely passing all year, always, on Dumb and Dumberer When Harry Met Lloyd. Because it wasn't necessary.
And I am keeping G.I. Joe The Rise of Cobra. I am watching Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and I am passing on Swept Away. For the record, by the way, all the sand from Star Wars Episode II, it came from the beach on Swept Away. So now we know why. Now, dear listeners, thank you for listening to this episode. You guys know the drill. If there is a topic that you want us to cover or a movie that you would like us to talk about on It's Not That Bad, hit us up on social media at Not That Badcast or go to our website at notthatbadcast.com. And while you're there, make sure you check out all of our other shows, especially the ones related to our special Razzie month. You can find them all there in the one place. Until next time, she's Carrie. I'm Jay. You guys are awesome. This is Keep Watch Pass on the It's Not That Bad podcast channel, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.